that time of the week, Pet Chat, where we talk to Cheryl Shaw, and we've got Dr. David Tabbert with us.
Good afternoon, Amanda. G'day, now, Cheryl.
Hello.
Now, Cheryl, I'm looking at your pin, mm-hmm. and you've got a dog bone on there.
Yeah, well, it's actually a rawhide chew. That's mm-hmm. You'll see them everywhere at the moment because Christmas is coming up. Mm. And people go and buy these dreadful treats as gifts.
I thought it was because she had a bone to pick with me.
Oh, you're on it today.
The day's only young.
Yep.
Yeah, this is comedy hour, right?
It is. It is comedy. Here we are, Pet Chat team.
That's right. And what have Please you got to talk not. About today, David?
I've been taking my dogs to the beach, which is great fun, except when they put sand in the car. Mm-hmm. But we're finding more and more pufferfish washed up on the shore, particularly when there's some heavy seas, and these are particularly dangerous to our pets. So if we get some time, depending on calls, mm-hmm. we may explore that topic.
We've got Lynn from Chisholm on the line. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. You've got a dog that's licking everything.
Absolutely, and if you stand still, he'll lick you too.
Oh, you must taste very good, Lynn.
Oh, it's driving me crazy, and I guess it's not good for him either.
Yeah, there's often something going on. So what sort of dog are we talking?
He's a Maltese cross, some mm-hmm. sort of terrier, and he's 12.
Right.
We've had him for about 18 months now. And I have to say it's only in the last probably 6 months, maybe 9 months, he's been doing this.
Yeah. And prior to, did you have any other animals or have you got other animals or
no.
anything, nothing else has changed in the environment for him?
No. When we got him, we didn't have any animals. Mm-hmm. Nothing's changed. He's a little bit sensitive to the grasses, but we've got that sort of under control.
Sure, yep.
But it's this licking, like he licks the bed, you know, doona cover. He'll lick the lounge and his paws, especially his front paws.
Yeah. Let's set aside the paws, licking the paws, because that's often yep. just going to be related to the allergies that he's got. Okay.
Yep.
The other behaviours, and I, my question or the answer I'm thinking, and I was looking at the notes before you came on air, but thinking about behavioural problems and anxiety as a major reason for this. I've got a couple of dogs, and one of them in particular, first thing she does every morning, loves to lick. And
yep.
we just simply ask her to sit and break that cycle, and we're training her not to do that. Okay. But when you have a dog that's doing this and licking furniture and things like that, I'm starting to wonder about whether or not there could be a neurological problem, and that is that there's an organic disease or something going on in the brain that's causing an altered behaviour, because ultimately all of the behaviours arise from areas of the brain. Okay.
Right. Okay, so, yep.
The other thing, anxiety could still be a major part of this. Right, and particularly, again, in an older dog, they do suffer from anxiety, and it can come on late in life, particularly where there's been a change in circumstances. And I know it's a little bit separated from you acquiring him and this behaviour starting, but that doesn't mean it couldn't be an anxiety disorder. So these kind of, you know, behavioural, something that we train them out of versus an organic disease of the brain, and that could be... you know, things like encephalitis, it could be inflammation, it could be a tumour. These are the possibilities versus the other thing is anxiety. So they're quite broad and quite different causes. If I was looking at him in front of me, I'd want to do a very detailed neurological examination just to see if there's any other areas of the brain and the function, the nervous function that have been affected. And that might give me clues as to whether we can separate it into these different buckets of possible causes. And, of course, then the treatment depends on what that cause may be.
He, I've sure, it's anxiety as well, because, you know, if I get up and leave the room, he follows me straight away to find out where I am, where I've gone to, you know, even to go to the bathroom, yeah. And he'll sit outside the door. So I can't sort of go anywhere without him, like he's right there behind me. I think that's a little bit of anxiety about maybe being left or something.
And the general approach we want to take with anxiety is that we want to desensitize them to the triggers, identify what those things are, and then gradually give them better coping strategies. And so that involves training. It often can involve medication that may be required, because that helps us to break those cycles. So it's worth checking in with your vet and running through these symptoms and talking with them about, you know, are we dealing with a neurological problem, or is it a symptom of anxiety? And if so, how can we start to work on this gradually? Because obviously, you know, he's been doing fine up until this point. So we can get him back to being comfortable in his environment. Okay.
All right. That would be great.
No worries.
Thank you very much.
Good
Thank
luck
you.
With that, Lynn.
Okay. All the Thanks. Best, Lynn. And next on the line, we've got Simon from East Maitland. Simon, you've got two male dogs, 8 and 9 months. One is always eating the other's poo.
Yeah.
What a pleasant problem for you, Simon.
I wouldn't put it that way, because the guy who does it, he's a golden retriever, very affectionate. He always wants to, you know, come and give you a kiss, so...
Yes.
So one's a German short-haired pointer, and one's a golden retriever.
Okay.
Both not de-sexed.
Yep. You said 8 to 9 months they are?
Yeah, so the retriever's about a month older.
Right, okay. So there's a fair bit of kind of disruption happening here. So we got two male dogs, not de-sexed. Testosterone levels are starting to go through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
And this is going to set up a little bit of a competitive outlook on things, but it's also going to signify or signal to one, I'm going to say the retriever, that he's losing the competition. And so he's not happy with things. And as a result, he's going to go around and start eating the other one's poo.
Yeah, right.
It's a funny way to deal with it, but it just in some way helps to alleviate that anxiety. So first of all, let's get the yard cleaned up as quickly as possible so that you minimise the opportunity for this to happen. Being the dogs they are, though, and depending on how much they're being fed, you know, they may be producing a fair bit.
It takes a while
for you to get it cleaned up.
Well, even then, like, you clean it, you turn around and there's more.
Right. Well, we might look at we might have to look at digestibility.
Full time, so.
Yeah, yeah. They're there during the day and so on.
Yeah.
I'm going to suggest, and I always do, because I think we get better health outcomes for dogs that they be de-sexed. And particularly when we've got two dogs together, you'll need to talk to your veterinarian about de-sexing at the age they are. I'm kind of a little bit on the fence about this de-sexing age with dogs. There's some evidence for delayed de-sexing, particularly in breeds that are predisposed to cartilage disorders, and certainly golden retrievers would probably fit into that category.
Yep.
But at the same time, we've got to do what's right for both of them in the environment.
Because these are more kids' dogs, even though when I say kids, they're adults.
Yeah.
They won't leave home. So the plan is to have them de-sexed. So I guess it's just the right time for the dogs. And would you suggest that if they were both de-sexed, this would stop this behaviour?
It would reduce the pressures in the environment that are creating the behaviour.
Okay.
So the behaviour exists in response to some either tension between them, all right, or some other factor that's triggering a degree of anxiety. So if we can de-escalate those things, it may not completely eliminate the behaviour, but if we de-escalate it to the point where that anxiety is not occurring, then there's no need for the dog to go and do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
Simon, I would like to just chime in there. With two dogs, male dogs of that age, it really would be advisable if they're living together to have them de-sex, because not just are we going to have the problem of the eating of the feces, but we're also going to start to have some fighting and some one of the dogs having a go at the other dog. And it starts off as play, but then it becomes a lot more intense. So I think de-sexing, David, would be really advisable there.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, that's on the definitely penciled in to be done. It's just a matter of when. And like you did mention something, holding off on larger dogs or something, but we'll go talk to our vet.
Because there's, I think we've got a way up. Like if I had one dog and I know there's a possible risk of cartilage disorders, then I might, and these are generally larger breed dogs, then I might delay that de-sexing till after 12 months of age. But when you've got two, the risks are they're actually going to have a couple of blues and you'll end up, you know, at the emergency centre after hours getting wounds stitched up. And I've been doing emergency work for 30 years and the number of dog fight wounds that we see that are caused by their companion dog that live in the same house. It's very rare that we actually see dog fight wounds where it's another dog from outside the house.
Yep.
Well, I'm not going to say very rare, but certainly the majority, strong majority are household dogs. So I think your safety level for these dogs, and it's going to reduce their anxiety and stress, allow them to settle down and get along if you get them de-sexed sooner rather than later.
Simon, just another thing, what food do they eat?
It's
a kibble or something?
Yeah, no, it's definitely dry food. I can't think of the brand.
No, that's okay. Just one of the things that you could do to deter a little bit of the eating of the feces is to add some dried pineapple into it, just a small amount, because when it passes through the dog, usually the dogs won't go and eat feces that contains pineapple.
Dried pineapple,
yep. Okay, so just sprinkle some of that in the food and see how it goes.
All right.
That was news to me as well. So I like that tip. Yeah. I think that sounds interesting.
There are some products on the market you can buy, but, pineapple's one of the ones that it does work.
Yeah.
So are you talking about not that candied?
No. Just your dried pineapple. You get it in the health food department of your supermarket and give that a whirl.
All right. Yeah, will do. Give it to both of them.
Okay.
No worries.
Good luck, Simon.
Thanks for your help.
Bye. Thank you. Sharon, you've got a Maltese that's got a phlegmy cough and a sneeze.
Yeah.
And it's been happening for several weeks?
Yeah.
Hi, Sharon. Now, how old's your little one?
He's, I think, 6 or 7.
6 or 7 years old? Okay. Yeah. And do you have any other animals?
Yes, I have another dog and I have a couple of hens, but they're nowhere near him.
Sure. And how's the other dog? No problems?
He's fine.
He's fine. Okay. And when does this cough happen? Is it morning, night, or any time?
Mainly night time, but in the mornings he's very, phlegmy and he'll sort of do 6 sneezes in a row and then he'll have a lot of gunk in his nose.
Okay.
Yeah, he's just...
All right. Yeah. Now, have you had him to the vet already or not yet?
Yes, I have, yes. And they gave him antibiotics and... then suggested that I extract some teeth and do blood tests and x-rays, and it's so unaffordable, and I'm drug-free with my animals as well, so I'm trying to work out a natural therapy for him to maybe bring up his immune system or something like that.
Yep. Now, did the antibiotics make any difference whatsoever?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah.
My sister's dog's the same, and he had 3 lots of antibiotics, and she's just giving him just like a natural thing to bring up his immune system. And she said he seems to be getting a little bit better, but I haven't gone that avenue yet. But there's been a lot of spraying in the sky, and he tends to sneeze a lot from that.
Okay. So let's just talk more generally. Though I'm going to touch on about why dogs cough and sneeze.
Yep.
And so it can be triggered by any number of things. The coughing reflex is actually processed through the brain. There's actually a part called the cough center, because it has to coordinate the nervous activity that generates the cough, that closes off, you know, your esophagus so that you don't bring vomit at the same time you cough, that sort of thing. And sneezing is similarly that sort of activity that involves a coordinated neurological effect. So what that means is that the brain can be affected by a lot of different triggers, okay? Mm-hmm. And so to generate that, most likely it's because there's direct irritation in the airways or in the sinuses and the nasal cavity. And that's why you're going to see this. Now, of course, you've also mentioned that there's some phlegm and a bit of mucky discharge from the nose. So
not all the time, no.
Oh, okay. So there is, yeah, but there's evidence there that there is some direct irritation. So when I hear about dogs coughing, and the reason I asked about time of day is that dogs that just have a simple, soft, shouldn't have said simple, sorry, have a soft cough without the sneezing, and it tends to happen at night, I'm more worried about heart disease.
Right.
Okay, because heart disease can generate changes in blood pressure, which puts fluid into the lungs, and then they start to get coughing, or they've got pressure as the heart enlarges, things like that. So, but when you start to have upper airway disease, which is what you're talking about, then we're thinking about things like, okay, pharyngeal disease, sinus disease, nasal disease. You mentioned some teeth problems there. The teeth actually, the roots of the teeth sit up through in the bone, which separate the nasal cavity and the oral cavity, and they can actually erode through the bone and lead to infection in the nasal cavity.
Wow.
That's pretty nasty when it gets to that stage, all right? And really the only treatment in that scenario is teeth removal. Because like there's no immune system's going to be able to repair bone when you've got an infection sitting there.
Yeah.
And also antibiotics, I actually find it really hard to get into these areas because you need good blood flow and good blood supply, and you need the bacteria to be sensitive to the antibiotic. And that's often a big concern too. Whenever we see oral infections, mouth or gum infections, where they're extending into the bone causing osteomyelitis, and then causing these cavities to develop, okay? So the immune system can do a lot, but unfortunately it can't do everything. Yeah. And in particular, when we rely upon, if you've got gunk coming out of the nose at any stage, what often happens is you'll get an infection in a sinus and things like that, and there's a lot of fluid in there, but we can give antibiotics, but the antibiotics can't get from the blood supply to the bacteria. Okay, because there's too much pus and things. And so with some of those patients, what I've done is I've actually had to flush their sinuses out. And we do that under anaesthetic because, excuse me, it's not it's not a very pleasant experience if you were doing it otherwise.
Yeah, of course.
So
he doesn't like me even touching his mouth, like his teeth in general anyway. He's only a little dog, but he probably have a big bite.
Yeah, it sounds like he's got some teeth problems.
His teeth pulled out, and the 20 teeth they took out, and it still didn't make it any better.
Yeah, well, this is the key thing is once you get to that point, you've got infection in the bone. It's never going to get better if the teeth stay, but removing the teeth is no guarantee that we'll be able to get on top of it. And I've had dogs on antibiotics for 6 months. To try and, you know, improve that. But it can take multiple visits. And as you've already said, like, yeah, costs do mount up because you've got this problem there. But you know, better to look after him in the best way possible. And, you know, once you get his teeth cleaned up and maybe he needs a flush through his nose, that sort of thing, under anaesthetic, that then allows his immune system to start to fight back, because currently his immune system is being held back from really trying to get on top of this.
Okay.
So if you can get those things cleaned up and he gets some longer term antibiotics, you may well find that, you know, he's on a good diet, you can get some healthy food into him, that'll allow his immune system to recover from this chronic infection in his airways.
Yeah, so change his diet. A few months back, from any kibble and just giving him like fresh meat you know, not processed and canned and nothing like that anymore. And he's having like boiled chicken and.
Yeah, you just need to make sure you speak with the vet about what's the proper balance of vitamins, which are essential, the amino acids, and make sure it's a balanced, you know, carbohydrate, protein, fat ratios so that we're not going to slow things down for recovery.
Okay, good luck with that, Sharon. All the best. And next on the line, we've got Carolyn from Anna Bay. Carolyn, you've got a six-month-old kitten that's a bit aggressive.
Yes, she is. And I'm at my wit's end. I just don't know what to do. I love it a bit, but I'm really not coping.
Oh, that's not good, Carolyn. Now, how many, do you have any other animals? Any other cats?
No, I've had cats all my life, lots of cats. I've never had a kitten that's aggressive. She can be just so loving and so affectionate, but today was the third time she's broken the skin this week, and I was just sitting there reading a book, and she just jumped up, bit my arm. I think she wanted where I was sitting, and it was horrible. It was really horrible.
Yeah, that's nasty. About 30-something years ago, I came across this idea. You might have heard of puppy preschool, right? So they also, you can get kitten kindy, which I thought, oh, come on, this is going to be a bit silly. But the point is that kittens and cats need training, okay? So they actually will respond to training and they will respond to the things that we do with dogs that we think, okay, obedience with dogs. We can train cats. Sure, they may be a little bit more, how should we say, unresponsive isn't quite the word because I want to encourage you to pursue this, but they can give the – yeah, stubborn, yeah.
Stubborn.
And they give the impression that, you do that, I'll do my own thing, you know. I'll sit where I want to sit. That's what your kitten's saying. So at 6 months old, they're still young enough to be able to – provide appropriate training. And it's a little bit different with dogs. It's certainly a lot shorter in duration. So we do more frequent but shorter duration training. It's different in the type of activities that we want them to do, but it still relies upon the same kind of classical conditioning, okay, behavior reward. And if we apply those principles, you can start to get improvement in some of this behaviour. Obviously, you've identified, I think I was sitting in where he wanted to be, but then who's running the house?
And that it can be just that particular chair. I mean, she's hyperactive. It's only she has two hyperactive sessions, morning and night.
Yes.
Middle of the day, she's fine, but she's a different cat when she's hyperactive, and she can bite me anywhere. Or I could be sitting outside, you know.
And she'll run over.
And she'd just run over and pounce on me,
Yeah, and she's trying to get your attention, but she's also exhibiting that play behaviour that they would be doing as kittens to learn to be adults, you know, to catch their food and things like that. So as we were saying before, the play behaviour turns into more serious behaviour. Like you don't want to have a 2-year-old cat or a 12-month-old cat that's attacking you from behind the door and ripping.
That's my
you know.
Concern. Yes, yeah.
So
sure.
there are a couple of resources you can certainly look online for kitten kindy, and I haven't looked at it myself, but I'm going to guess there may well be some really good resources on things like YouTube that'll be able to give you some basic exercises. You've got to find the treat, by the way, the reward that she really likes. That's often the first thing. And mimicking the play behaviour, so, for instance, those times a day you were talking about, that's when you want to get her to be doing other things for you so that, you know, you're not just her play toy.
Yes, I'm the only toy in town, I think. I mean, she's got lots of toys, but she does fixate on me, yes.
Yeah, and make sure you also, if you wear clothing that's appropriate, that she, you know, she's going to minimise injury to you.
Yeah, and the other thing is just making sure that you are interacting with those toys. Even though the kitten has toys around, you need to actually pick them up and throw them, or, you know, dangle the feather on a stick, because she's wanting to have the interaction with you and trying to get your attention. So if you can play at those times that you know that she's a little bit more, you know, sort of feisty, playing with a feather on a stick, even sitting in the chair, she's going to be interactive with that.
Yeah, we did this with our cats all the time, feather on a chair, and we find they basically get to the point where they do it half a dozen times and then they just walk away.
Yes, yes.
And they're like, okay, that's enough. So...
What about spraying with water?
No.
I wouldn't be doing that at this stage anyway. I think you'll find you probably need to redirect her is going to be much more effective.
I have been doing that because I can't get her off. I'm scared of getting hurt, and I'm really quite frightened of her.
Yeah, I would have a chat with your vet up there too, and see if they've got some other resources. There may be someone local who could also help you out.
You might want to get a fellaway too, and plug in the fellaway. So it's an appeasing pheromone that you plug in to your PowerPoint, and that will just give...
It's very calming.
Very calming. And it might just take that edge off the kitten, that and that will help you as well, because she's obviously got you under her paw at the moment.
The fellyway's not calming for people, because we can't smell it.
If the kitten's behaviour is changed, it'll obviously make Caroline a lot more comfortable.
Yeah. Okay, good luck with that, Caroline. This is Pet Chat on 2 and URFM. We've got Kathy on the line from Valentine. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Cheryl. How are you going?
Hi, Kathy. Hi, David. Now, your border collie, 19 months old. We've had a change of behaviour. What's going on?
Okay, so it's a border collie cross Jack Russell, 19 months old. Probably in the last week or so, when we take him for his walk to the off-the-lead park, he isn't coming back when it's time to leave. So like yesterday, for example, I was probably 20 minutes trying to get him to come back to me so we could go home. And this is about the second or third time it's happened. So really quite concerned as to why that is happening. The other thing too is that I've noticed, like, when it goes to bedtime, he would have his bed in our room, and now he doesn't actually go into our room. He doesn't want to go in there. So not too sure what the behaviour is.
Okay. Do you have other dogs?
No, just the one.
No, okay. And how often do you go to the dog park, the off-lead park?
We probably go down there maybe 4 times a week.
Oh, okay. Yep, fair bit.
Yeah.
Now, did you do any basic, like, obedience training, et cetera, with him when he was younger?
Only what we've done ourselves.
Yeah.
With a qualified person. That we got him as a rescue dog about 7 months ago, I think it was. So I'm not too sure what the behaviour or what he'd had previously.
Yeah, but he was actually coming back to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would probably try to spend a bit more time doing a little one-on-one work without all of the other stimulation that you're finding at the dog park, et cetera. You can also look at doing a long lead, so you can get like 10-metre leads and things like that that – you'll be able to, have him connected to you. This not at the dog park. Don't do that at the dog park. But being able to work with him one-on-one and just spend a bit more time, kind of reinforcing the behaviour. It sounds like he's been motivated to, but he's forgotten what he should be doing. And it's not surprising. He's kind of hit that, you know, young adulthood, and he knows his way around the world and thinks he knows everything that works. And so, you know, what does he need you for? I got myself to the dog park. I can get myself home, kind of thing. When you do a bit of one-on-one work with him, where you're, again, going back to those basics and so on, just also look at how he responds to either his name and praise or food treats, and you want to make sure you've got some high value treats with you.
Right.
So that it's not just you standing in a park calling his name and him just looking at you. Okay. You've got to have a way to change that behavior. We've got to reset things back and remind him of why he wants to come to you.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Okay. And because when you get to the dog park, there's other dogs. And if there's not other dogs, there's heaps of other smells. And so there's so much else. And that's much more interesting than, you know, what you are, Kathy. He just wants to go and check everything out. And he'll come back when he's good and ready. So if we can make it worthwhile for him to return to you,
right,
no matter what, then he'll remember that the next time you're at the dog park.
Okay, not a problem. So I'll just try and get some high-quality treats for him and work on that and see how we go.
Yeah, I like the idea of those long leads. They're like a long, I don't know.
Yeah,
they're just a long, really long lead.
We have been using the long lead with him, and then just recently, probably about 3 months ago, I guess, we took him off that. And we generally take that with us. And that's where he gets a little bit nervous being on, like, I think when we go to put him on his lead, that's when he doesn't want to sort of come back to us as such. So I don't know whether that's.
Yeah, he has to. We have to remind him why he wants to come back. Make it worth his while.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, good luck with that, Kathy.
All right, thank you so much for taking my call.
No worries.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, we've got about a minute and 45 seconds left.
Oh, so if you go to the dog park.
So we might just quickly have a look at our pets of the week. We've got Hubba Bubba, she's a gorgeous cat, black and white domestic short hair, still a kitten, born early this year, and she has a beautiful white chest and paws with a mostly black back. And do you want to say anything about Hubba Bubba?
I just reminded us, because Carolyn's call about the trouble she's having with her six-month-old, is kittens can be very active. And Hubba Bubba's like maybe a little bit older, maybe about 9 months, and but they're still very active. So it's some, you know, when you take pets like this, you've got to be able to put time with them, and specifically that kind of training aspect as well.
And have a bit of energy to actually and play with them.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And next we've got Panda, beautiful dog.
Well, Panda is wants to chase sheep because Panda's a border collie cross Kelpie.
4 month old.
These dogs are very, very energetic, highly intelligent, and left to their own devices can become quite anxious. We seem to have had a theme of anxiety today. So let's prevent that. Well, we want to prevent it. So, again, a lot of exercise, a lot of attention, and a lot of that training work will pay dividends with a dog like Panda.
Oh, fantastic. Well, if you'd like to check out our Dog and Cat of the Week, you can go to 2NURFM.com.au. Also, congratulations to Lynn from Chisholm. You've won our $50 pet voucher, food voucher for today. And we are out of time.
No worries.
Yeah, we've had a great day. Thank you so much. And we'll get to the topics that you want to talk about next week, I guess.
Certainly will. We'll
thank do. You. This is 2NURFM.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.